I would start actually with the jazz festival in Ljubljana. You are coming to. You are one of the drummers who will perform and in this year's jazz festival, and one of the program one of the program notices that this is the festival of the drummers. A few drums, solo sets, yourself leading a band, and so on.
Okay.
And I would like to ask you with this. I'm on your website.
Yeah.
And you have actually Drum Rider on your website.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would like to start with you, you as a drummer. You started very young. Your father was a drummer.
Yeah.
What actually your father did bring and actually bring to your drumming, let's say, formative years?
Oh, shit. I mean, not just as a drummer, but a what should I say, a person, a parent. Because, I mean, he, my dad was running a jazz club in England before he moved to Norway.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then when we moved to Stavanger, they got the jazz club going there. So, I mean, I was basically fortunate enough to be exposed to quite a range of jazz-related music from I was, yeah, five until I was eight, basically, with hearing Art Blakey live, Steve McCall, Billy Higgins, a lot of incredible music. So, of course, that made a big, big impact on me. And, I mean, he was practicing drums at home before I was born, when I was born, in the bedroom, living room, and a good record collection, which he was playing from very much. And, yeah, I mean, the musicians like George Coleman or whatnot, they were invited home to our home. So it was quite a special childhood, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I'm still looking to your Drum Rider. Actually, your drum set, it's not so rich. It's basic, actually. How did you actually build during the years your drum set? How did it evolve? How did you come to the decision to make, let's say, actually quite small set?
No, I mean, my dad, there was tons of percussion and sometimes we would set up the drums with absolutely everything. So, I mean, that means two or three bass drums and lots of cowbells, cymbals, woodblocks, everything. So, which was fun, and of course, a lot of different sounds to use and play on. But when I was sort of getting active myself with the playing, I would do the same every now and then and sort of include as much as possible. And I think at a time when I was touring, I was touring with 80 kilos of drums when I was the age of 25 or so. And which included all sorts of crap, but it's a sort of thing you have to go through. You include as much as possible, and then you start stripping it down to the basics in a way. And I mean, from a point of view, one has to strip it down as well. In terms of, I mean, you can't carry 80 kilos all the bloody time. But I find it interesting to strip it down to a minimum, and then try and find the same sounds as if you had the full kit.
Yeah, but you have a lot of drumsticks.
You, of course. I mean, and there's different sounds in the different drumsticks.
Yeah.
Not every drummer or musician is aware of that. I mean, you have drummers that hit the drum and that's the way it's going to sound. But I mean, there's a million sounds there that one hasn't heard, and I mean, it's endless.
Would you consider yourself mainly as a jazz drummer or broader?
Jazz drummer. I mean, hopefully a musician. But I mean, of course, I mean, it's the music that I'm playing is jazz related, and that's where I come from, kind of. I mean, I was in rock bands when I was 14, 15, 16, but playing more and more open, free music from 17, 18, I guess. But I mean, the roots is in jazz music, for sure.
Are you still related to or still listen to a lot of, let's say, rock bands, noise bands, even electronic music?
I mean, it goes through sort of phases. I mean, once I got a list of metal bands from Lasse Marhaug, and then I was listening to tons of that stuff. And then the recent 3 years, I've been going a lot to Brazil, so listening and buying lots of records from Brazil and listening to that most of the time, Ethiopian music. But I mean, and now going back to hip hop and rap. But no, I mean, I check out as much music as possible. I always want to be surprised, and I always want to hear something I haven't heard before. So, and I think that's kind of your duty as a musician. You have to investigate and hunt down music you haven't heard before.
Have you ever made, let's say, music with a drum machine or, let's say, electronic devices?
No, I mean, I've always been quite ambivalent to all of that. I mean, I think I regard electronics as an instrument of its own. I mean, I think as a musician, you have to kind of pay respect to the instruments that exist. And I mean, I would say you should spend just as much time as you would on a clarinet as if you pick up electronics. I mean, it's an instrument with sounds you don't know, the function of it. And I mean, in somewhat, there's a lot of disrespect for electronics in the sense that people have the tendency of just sort of buying two pedals and all of a sudden they're doing electronics and hey. I bought a drum machine 6-7 years ago, which has been, in its case, I mean, it's an old thing, so I need to find out how it works. But, I mean, it would be fun to play around with it, but I would be very, what should I say, I would wait before using it live or in any recording situation, yeah.
Well, if there would be, let's say, some guy who is more, let's say, traditional jazzman, and he would or she would invite you to his, let's say, bebop band, would you accept it?
I mean, I would do maybe one-off gigs with a nice jazz player for sure. I mean, I enjoy that music. I enjoy listening to it and I enjoy playing it. But I wouldn't probably join a band or go on the road with a more straight-ahead bebop band. But I mean, if it was a one-off gig with some guys that I like, maybe I would still do it. Yeah.
Yeah. If someone would say let's play the music of Charlie Parker for example.
I don't know. I mean, it seems a little bit strange to sort of. It depends. If you're going to sort of go into that world and copy it, then I think it's pointless. If you're going to go into that world and try to make your own take of it, maybe. But it depends on the players, and I mean. Also, I respect that music too much to want to fuck around with it.
Yeah. Another thing, I'm again on your website now. One thing you mentioned that you play your first solo concert in 1999. How many solo do you still do solo?
And I mean, if people ask, I do. Yeah, of course. But I mean, it's not more than maybe. 4 or 5 times per year that I do a solo concert.
How solo is different to group playing to you?
Well, I mean, I think of music as a communication and a conversation, and it's something that happens with two or more people and with an audience and whatnot. But I think it's important to work solo because you figure out quite a few things about yourself in terms of music, but not least physical strength and stamina. And it's stripped down to just you, and you've got to deal with your own ideas, and you have to throw back, what shall I say, comments to your own ideas in a way. Every time I play solo, I'm sort of, why the hell am I doing this? Just before playing. Because it's sort of a little bit painful, but I think it's a good learning experience.
Why? Sorry to interrupt you. Why it is painful?
Well, because you're going to walk on stage by yourself, and you know that you maybe have a half an hour, 40 minutes, and just before walking on stage, I've got absolutely no clue of what I'm going to do, and you don't know how it's going to go. You've got nothing else to relate to than yourself, and hopefully some energy from the audience and the acoustics and the drums and whatnot. But, and there's been times when I'm playing solo where I've locked myself or trapped myself and couldn't get out of whatever I was doing. And then just hopefully something will trig the music in a way. So I like it when it gets to the point when I feel that I'm not 100% in control of the music and that the music is playing me in a way.
But do you like to work with other drummers, to have, let's say, 2, 3, 4 drummers in the group or just drummers?
No, I mean, I've done a few duo gigs with a few drummers, but it's difficult at times. I mean, it's not all drummers that I would like to work with. And but I've done a few duo shows with another Norwegian called Ståle, who's running the Blowout Festival together with me. And him I like playing with, but I remember 10 years ago we did a band with 2 drummers, and as soon as I played, he'd played, and he would do the exact same thing as me, and then I was all, what's the point in doing that? Okay, I can see the power of 2 drummers doing the same beats for a while, but I like it if we, take different positions within the music,
mm-hmm.
even if it's the same instruments. But 3 or 4 drummers, then it becomes a circus.
You're mentioning that being active in several bands at the same time is your actually deliberate method, actually working method. Actually, this is some kind of definition also of touring musician, especially jazzmen. I mean, it was always like that. But tell me more about this, working with different several bands all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one guy, he wanted to have me in his group and a few other guys. But he wanted us to strip down the amount of bands to maybe 1 or 2 or 3. And I said, no, I want to. I have to play with at least, the 7, 8 groups that I'm in, because there's so many musicians I want to play with, and I like to work on a regular basis with the bands. And I see the quality in that, in the sense that the bands feed off each other. So if you do this in one band, you might take some of that to the other band, but it also makes you stronger as an individual, because then you have to define the bands and make them different, kind of. So, I mean, okay, it's always me playing in the different bands, and I play the way that I do, but I play differently with let's say, Terry X than when I play with Otomo Yoshihide.
Mm-hmm.
Or Peter or Mats or Ken or Joan. I mean, because if you're playing with strong musicians, they will bring out different things in your playing, hopefully the other way as well in my case, but... No, I mean, yeah, I could never strip it down to just 1 or 2 or 3 bands.
What are the criteria for yourself when you are joining to other bands?
What do you mean? What's the criteria?
Let's say, I mean, interesting musician, interesting musical concept.
No, I mean, when we go on the road, I mean, we're spending quite a lot of time together. Of course, we're spending more time off stage than when we're on stage, so it's very important that it works socially, that we have a nice time together socially. And but of course, I mean, it's got to be good music. But and it's interesting with the group that I'm on tour with now, The Thing. I mean, we've been working together for, I don't know, 15, 16, 17 years, and we still, thank God, managed to surprise ourselves and each other when we walk off stage, but because of what's happened on stage, and we still get along socially, and the same goes with Ken Vandermark or Peter Brotsman and whatnot. But the social aspect is extremely important, and I mean, touring with Ken is extremely inspiring. I mean, he listens to tons of music which I like and know, but he also knows of stuff that I haven't got a clue about, so we're always kind of feeding off each other, and yeah, try triggering new areas within our interests, so to say.
Last year, in the same time, actually, just before the jazz festivals, I did an interview with Mats because he was coming with Fire Orchestra. Now, yeah. I would like to ask you a little bit about your group you're coming with in Ljubljana, about Large Unit. It's actually quite young group. Three years, it's not. How did you start Large Unit?
Well, I mean, okay, I was in Peter's group, the Chicago Tentet, and Ken also had his territory band, Flor de Ashta, had a group called Circulation Totale. But all these groups were kind of on and off, and the Tentet was, I guess, the most regular group. And I always enjoyed playing in large ensembles, and I always had an idea of starting one myself. I tried 20 years ago when I was studying up in Trondheim. And then there was talk of Johan Battling, the bass player of Fire, that him and I would to start a Swedish-Norwegian group of 10 or 12 musicians. But I think it was when the Tentet, the Chicago Tentet, ended, that sort of gave me a push to sort of, okay, now you do it. Plus, the fact that there was a presenter in Norway that said, well, why don't you a week at this pre-production place, whatever they call it, and you put together a band, and so kind of that instigated it. Also, a festival in Norway, Molde, mm-hmm. Jazz Festival, said, okay, yeah, we'll pay, we want to have this band, and let's go. But I mean, it took me maybe 3 or 4 months putting together the band, because I then went to hear some shows with some of the younger players. And that was an interesting process, putting together the group of people, because, yeah, as I said, I wanted it to function socially, and so that was an important factor. I wanted some young players that I hadn't played with, some young players that I wanted to play with. But, I mean, the funny thing is that when I was 35, was the first time I was not the youngest in the band. It's funny, because then Flor de Ashta and I, we began playing with a bass player, Jon Runeström, and I realized, shit, I'm not the youngest anymore. So then I thought, okay, well, now's the time to sort of start playing, or consciously playing with some younger musicians, but also with a large unit. The original lineup, there was already then two trios within that group, which I found interesting, because then I could use those as, what shall I say, units within the large units. Mm-hmm. Okay, some guys left the band, some new people, but I'm still working, creating new groups within the group, mm-hmm. on stage, mm-hmm. and within the compositions and whatnot.
And the compositions are all yours? How do you work with the group?
That was also a challenge, because I've tried to write a few tunes here and there, and even when I was studying, we had a group together with some other students, which I wrote a little bit for. But when the gig was on and we had 3 days of rehearsal, then I had a month before where I was basically working out all the pieces and had never had that challenge in front of me. So that was incredible. And I think I managed to do an okay job, and also to pull out the qualities of the different players within the pieces. But I always, from the very beginning, my intention was or is that the pieces should be so simple as that people can focus on playing really good than focusing on not making any mistakes, in a way.
What is a repertoire? Do you play older pieces, or you decide to play just newest pieces, even never recorded before?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, okay, in the beginning, I had, I don't know, 10 pieces that we were doing for quite a while, but then I was trying to bring in at least 2 or 3 pieces for every tour that we did. If we go on the road now, we will be dealing with most of the new material, but the band is so strong that we can very easily pick up one of the old tunes. But then, saying old tunes, I mean, the band is not more than 2.5 or 3 years old, so... But going on the road, let's say, yes, last year we did 40 gigs almost, and I was rearranging the tunes every night, and I would probably split a tune in two and then put it together with another one. I would take away one part, we would just play a third of the tune, because it was interesting to me when we went on the very first tour in the spring of 2014. After 3 gigs, I did the mistake of sort of leaving the set list the same, and then people kind of anticipated the next tune, and I'm not going to say that it became a routine of the program, but I realized that I really had to shake up every gig to make a different set list. And then when we went on a longer tour, I realized that to keep the music fresh and to keep the musicians alert and focused, then it was good to change the order of solos and combinations of musicians within the different pieces.
Is it just coincidence that there are just Nordic musicians or musicians from Nordic countries in large units?
Well, when I decided to start the band, I wanted it to be Norwegian or Nordic. I mean, of course, the thing is that, because that also pushed me to think differently. I mean, of course, I could have put together a band with Mats and Ingebrigt or the usual people that I was working with.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even think of names. I mean, one difficult thing with this group is that there's no real names in it, at least not then. So it was difficult to sell it because, okay, people think, yeah, Paul started a new group, that's great, but there's no people in it that we know. But I enjoyed that fact because then people have to book the band because of the music and none of the sort of name dropping. And for me to take a band on the road with, what should I say, less known musicians, I thought that was a nice thing to do in a way.
Are you the main organizer of tours, of booking, of negotiations?
Yeah, I have been until now. I mean, we have an agent now this year, which I'm hoping is going to work out. But I mean, basically, I did all the booking up until now,
mm-hmm.
which is a little bit too much work. But then again, I like it. I find it fun. But I'm realizing that there's limits of how much I can do.
I mean, I have to ask you. I mean, of course, you're from Norway, and Norway now seems like a dream country for let's say creative new music. So I remember we discussed it with Mats because he's from Sweden, and Sweden is now very different compared to 20 years ago regarding cultural policies, social policies. How would you in your estimation, what's the condition of new music, jazz, even state support, cultural policy for in Norway now?
Yeah, I mean it's something that I'm very aware, and I'm trying to. Well, let's put it this way. I mean, there's a ton of support money in Norway, and despite the fact that there's now a conservative and right wing government or coalition running the country, there is still support. Thank God for that. But as a musician or artist, you cannot take that money or support money for granted. I mean, it might not exist in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years and whatnot. And I think as a young musician, you really have to take advantage of it there and now and make the best out of it and do as much as possible with whatever support money is. I mean, there's a tendency of, oh, yeah, great, we can go on tour and do door gigs all over Europe, and then we get back home and then we pay ourselves nicely out of the support money, which is the biggest mistake you can do, because then it ruins the whole market for you as a contemporary musician and whatever future musicians. So it's amazing that the support exists and you can do a lot with it, but it, in a way, it takes away the risk which lies within being a musician, because I mean, you choose to be a musician, which is kind of the most stupid thing you can do if you want to survive and make some money and whatnot. But then again, you'll manage either way. And people sort of, oh, can I have a family if I'm a musician? Oh, yeah, well, if I'm living in Norway, there's support money, well, then I can have a family and then I can have a comfortable life. And I mean, people have a tendency of seeking comfortable lives and all that. And I think if you choose to become a musician, well, you should actually accept the risk that lies within that decision. So it's a little bit complicated, I think. I mean, it's strange. Some guy came to me and, yeah, said, oh, there's so much good music coming out of Norway. Well, okay, he's hearing all that because there's support money that can send the bands out and things are well organized and whatnot. But I'm always saying, well, there's good musicians in Finland and Sweden and Denmark and whatnot. but they don't necessarily have the money to get out of their country and tour as much as the Norwegian bands can.
I must ask you, what is your status? Do you apply for let's say for subsidies? You have special status conferred by the let's say government? Or, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's different. It's pretty incredible because there's at least 4, 5, 6 different fundings that I can apply from for large unit, let's say. Mm-hmm. And one you can apply all through year, and there's one that's got 2 application dates. And there's one major funding which means that you can get support for a band, and which will is a big amount of money. You can either get it for 1 or 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and that's, of course, absolutely incredible because it means that you can plan way ahead of time. And, I mean, we haven't got that support with this band yet. I thought we were going to get it, but... still, we've managed to do a lot with the support that we've received, and the guys in the band, they are willing to go on the road and play for a little bit less than, let's say, they were doing a quintet and whatnot, because mm-hmm. they there's quite a dedication to the music, and just the fact that we are 12 guys on stage is pretty incredible. So I must say that the musicians in this band they're pretty easygoing. Also, I mean, they're a little bit younger and not sort of super busy as, let's say, Dave Rempis or Ken or Miles Williams. So in that sense, it's easier for me to book tours or book set off periods or ask if they can do a one-off gig if there's a festival that comes in, and then most people can actually do it.
I must admit, it is funny because you're talking now about younger musicians. I still remember when we saw you first time with The Thing in Slovenia, and we were wondering, who is this young fellow? You know, right. now it's changed.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, I remember 10 years ago, we were in Australia the first time, and then I was 30 and or 31, and there was a musician who was 20, and he was sort of, how old are you guys? I said, we're 31. And he said, what? You're that old? And I thought, 31 is that old? But for a 20-year-old, that is old.
Yes.
But I mean, I think... I've never thought about age, but people sort of kind of remind you of it. But I think as soon as you pass 30, it doesn't matter. And I mean, and even if you're 27, okay, that's young and not, I don't know what, but at least at the age of 27, you should kind of know what you're doing and have some personality going on within the way that you play music and think about music.
Now, again, a question about Norway. But what is the status of improvised music or music you are involved with, let's say, in Norway compared to other various fields of, let's say, jazz-related musics in Norway?
I mean, what's interesting to see, well, now and the increase of interest in improvised music the last 10 years, I mean, there was a club called Blur in Oslo, and they set off a spark of people's interest towards improvised music. And I mean, the only guy doing this kind of music was Frode Jerstad for many, many years. And okay, one thing that you see is that people sort of they jump on it and say, "Oh, wow, this sounds great! Yeah, we can do any kind of sounds, and we play together, and it's a nice sort of safe community of musicians and whatnot." And then the sort of the risk taking is gone, but I think at the time when this club began, there was a lot of musicians were curious about other kinds of music, and the rock musicians came to hear the jazz gigs and the other way, and noise music was kind of introduced. What shall I say? Yeah, for sure, there's a growing interest, and there's a lot of improvisers now in Norway. There's also a lot of musicians that play all kinds of music, mm-hmm. which, okay, you have to check it out, you have to do it to find out who you are. But I find it a little bit schizophrenic if a person is doing a pop gig one day and then a completely improvised gig the next day. Then again, Harm Bennett was doing that in the 60s, so why not do it now? But then again, people, of course, like the pop gig because that's paying a little bit better. And then, but I think for the mind, it's a little bit schizophrenic, because you can very, very easily hear if the person is honest within the music he's playing when you're hearing either doing the pop music or the jazz music and whatnot.
You mentioned Frode Jerstad. What is his status actually in Norway?
No, I mean, he's got a lot of respect in Norway for what he's done through all the years. I mean, he was quite a sort of, what shall I say, a lonely wolf in a sense, playing this kind of music. And he was playing more with musicians from abroad. I mean, he's never toured a lot, so he hasn't kind of got a name in Europe like Mats or Ken, for example. But... No, he's a key factor of the scene in Norway, I would say.
Why did you start your festival, annual festival, all yours? It was your idea, as I think, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it began when this club, as I mentioned, Blå, started, and there was also a label called Sofa. And I thought, okay, well, we need a festival now to sort of, as a statement of the interest of this kind of music. And I was thinking, okay, I want to put on music I myself want to hear, and I would put on music or bands that I want people to be able to hear. So, I mean, initially it was, I mean, it's 15 years ago now, and initially it was, my idea was that it was going to be a third or 30% ad hoc groups, I mean, put together on the spot, and 30% should be regular groups doing improvised music, and then I wanted 30% to being solo, and at least 10% was going to be electronics or noise. I mean, there wasn't so much of that going on in Norway at that point. I mean, the festival we had 3-4 years ago, there was almost 70% noise and electronics. Mm-hmm. But so that has changed. But it was basically to as a statement of what was going on in Oslo at the time. And yeah, the festival is 15 years now. I actually pulled out of it after the last festival because I'm touring so much, and it was a little bit too much work for me to do that as well. And then I have another festival called Blowout, which is in August.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's become an important festival. And I mean, it happens just after Christmas, so there's nothing else going on. And people are kind of hungry for something else than all the food and drinking they've been doing at Christmas time. So it's an important festival. That's for sure.
Yeah. I have to ask you this about the university in Trondheim, about the jazz department. What when you were there when you were young? I mean, you were attending the jazz department at the university in Trondheim. What is so special about educational process in Trondheim? This is now like a famous department. What is so special?
Yeah, I mean, if not the actual, well, it depends what you regard as musical education. I mean, in a way, musical education is happening right now, or when you're on the road, or when you go to a concert. I mean, I always say that that's the most important musical education, going to see a band live. But the good thing, or the great thing about the 2 years I spent in China was that you had access to rehearsal space. You could practice, I don't know how many hours a day if you wanted to, and you were hanging out with musicians with mutual interests within music and whatnot. And, I think, yeah, those 2 years were important for me, but it's also a good school because they kind of, it's not this, Japanese or Suzuki way where they strip down the person and then build you up again. I mean, they look upon you. Well, when you enter the school, okay, well, what qualities do you have? And then they build from that, in a way. And they basically believe in the individual and want you to develop from who you are and what you are and whatnot. So in that sense, it's a different way of dealing with musical education than, let's say, Berklee. And there would be gigs and get-togethers and jam sessions. So, I mean, it's an important school, but of course, 20 years ago, that was almost the only one in Norway. Now there's good stuff going on in Oslo, in Bergen, in Stavanger. So people apply to all these different... I mean, there was a sort of desperation 20 years ago that you had to enter the school in Trondheim, and if not, you wouldn't make it. But, I mean, if you're determined on playing music, you'll make it anyway. So the school's not going to decide if you're going to become a musician or not. But what is strange these days is that people are studying music for 7 or 8, 9 years and then to just become a teacher. And I'm wondering what that is about.
Mm-hmm.
But in relation to all that, I mean, when you look at Berklee School of Music, where people are practicing by themselves for 7, 8, 9 hours per day, and they never go to see a concert, and they never play with any other musicians, or if they do, they're just trying to copy some other musician, or from a record, or trying to recreate Kind of Blue again, then it's going the opposite way of where it should go, because, I mean, music is a social thing, and it's strange that today, sometimes in some of the sort of very strict schools, it becomes a solitary thing.
During your study, did you in that time also, you were playing also in other groups, or you just started with the bands from the, let's say, composed from the students?
When I entered the school, I was in groups with Frode Ashtar and another trumpet player in Stavanger called Didrik Ingvaldsen, and we got together a group called Element before I entered the school, together with Ingebrigt and a few others. So, I mean, there was already bands going, and I had to take so much time off from school to go on tour, and they, in the end, well, sort of, what's the point of you being here? So I became more and more busy through those 2 years, which, of course, was great. And, I mean, when I left the school and went to Oslo, a ton of bands it was good time and inspiring time. But I mean, most important for me being at that school was being with the other musicians and learning new things about ways of playing music at daytime and nighttime.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a very serious question. I mean, jazz, improvised music is music. It's actually music formed of musicians playing together publicly, and going to school to learn. It's always a little. I'm always a little bit reserved about that.
Yeah,
so it's a big question. I mean, if you got this huge educational system, what kind of system it is? I mean, for me, regarding to the fields of music you are into.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's as I was saying. It's strange for me when people study for 7 years and I'm wondering, well, why is that? Is it so that you'll make more money when you're going to teach? And why are you going to spend 7 years at school if you're just going to teach? And where is the music? Where is the music inside you? I mean, you don't want to let it out, or what is actually going on? And I mean, what should I say? The class that I was in, which was 10 people, maybe there's 1 or 2, 3, or 4 that are really active as mm-hmm. musicians touring, and they know who they are and strong personalities, and the rest became either teachers or doing sort of theatre gigs and whatnot. So, I mean, you've got to be strong and have a personality before you enter the school, because if not, the school is either it's not going to shape you at all, or your fellow musicians, and you're just going to go through those 2 years and you'll be unchanged. And, I mean, you've got to have opinions to say against the teacher of what he's talking about, and because of course it's always going to be subjective. So I disagreed with some of the ways that the teaching was going on and what they were talking about and how they regarded so and so music. So I mean it's a two-sided thing, I think. But for the school in Trondheim, that was a very open way of dealing with music and jazz music. Let's take Berklee, is the complete opposite.
How many venues, let's say, do you have now to perform in, when you can perform in Norway, in various cities? It's very disparate, actually. It's not just Oslo or some other cities. It's everywhere, actually, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, well, okay, with improvised music, it's limited of how many places you can play. It's maybe, I would say, 4 or 5 different cities. There's a few smaller places now in Norway you could perform, but I mean, I can't do more than, say, 10 gigs in Norway per year, because there's a limited amount of clubs, and there's a ton of musicians, and a lot of young musicians, and people are good at booking, and there's a big competition in finding gigs, that's for sure. And I mean, I'm of course touring more in Europe than in Norway. There's a lot of places in Norway to play at, but there was much more before in relation to the amount of musicians or bands.
Uh-huh. What about club economy? Do they pay? in Norway?
Some of the clubs pay very well, some not so well, but I mean, it's funny, the minimum fee has been the same, or has, is actually less now if you compare, if you relate it to the index value of Norway, or what people are paying taxes, or I mean, what a piece of bread costs in the shop now is 10, 20 times more than it was 20 years ago, let's say.
Can I ask you what kind of arrangement are there? Is that guarantee fee or it's from the door?
Most places there's a guarantee fee when they also cover hotel and dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some travel sometimes, or you take that out of the fee, or you get travel support by yourself. But I mean, so the clubs are supported by the Jazz Federation and different organizations. And of course, there's clubs and pubs that do door gigs, but I try to stay away from that. But I know that the students in Trondheim, where I went 20 years ago, they are actually doing door gigs or shitty paid gigs, getting the same money as I got 20 years ago.
Do you have musicians' organizations like musicians' unions or other forms of collective organizations to for this kind of matters?
Yeah, for sure. And okay, maybe they could do a better job, but for sure there's a musicians' union. But I think they take better care of musicians that are playing in the symphony orchestras, for example.
So, let's say, for jazz man or improviser, there's no such, let's say, collective organization caring for his, let's say, economic arrangements?
No. I mean, there is a Norske Jazzforum, and they do a good job, and they work continuously to make the conditions for jazz musicians better, for sure. I mean, things are very well organized in Norway in that sense. I mean, it works. But of course, it can always become better. But I think it's important that not only musicians get support, but the clubs as well. And then, of course, there has to be some rules and whatnot, how the clubs are running. So, it's important that the clubs get the support as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, let's say 100 musicians, they get a shitload of support. And if there's nowhere to play, that doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't help that the musicians are getting support money because you need a place to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you go to, let's say, for the tour, you apply for let's say, subsidies, let's say, covering your travel expenses or...
Yeah, that we do.
I mean, it
would be impossible to do as much as we have done with large units without all of that support.
Yeah. So even for this tour in Ljubljana, you will get some, or you applied for that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I avoid applying for sort of single gigs, but, what should I say, the money should have been better, though. I mean, we're doing 3 festival gigs this year.
Mm-hmm.
In Lisbon and Ljubljana and Salford. I mean, okay, the money is okay at one of the festivals and it's a lot better at the 2 other festivals. But, so I did apply for some money for these 3 gigs and we got a little bit, which helps because the travel is really expensive, especially if you're going in and out for just one day. So some supports, which helps so that I can actually pay the band members an okay fee.
What is so attractive touring in the United States for you?
Oh, I mean...
And Canada too now, because you're...
I thoroughly enjoy touring the US or North America. I mean, okay, we saw signs, signs outside of people's houses that they are voting for Donald Trump. And I said, wow, yeah, it's true. There are people that are voting for him. But the people that we meet are kind of on the same page as us. But the audience is extremely enthusiastic and eager. They're also very appreciative of the fact that we've made the trip over to the US to do concerts. So, I mean, yesterday we had audience that came up from Seattle that I heard us the night before.
But you were playing in Canada yesterday, yeah.
Yes.
So they came from the Seattle to Canada. I mean,
They drove 6 hours to hear us, and they had heard us the night before. So it's a very dedicated audience here, I must say.
Let's you are as a touring musician, you have a lot of experience of places, of course. But in your sense, where, let's say, for example, where do you see the differences between Chicago scene, because Ken is there, of course, and New York?
I mean, two very different cities and a different group of musicians and different ways of thinking. But I mean, in New York, as a musician, you can really get lost, and it's very, very segregated into very many small pools of musicians. In Chicago, I have a feeling it's the South and the North side, and that's it.
In a way.
There's still people in Chicago that I don't know of, and there's people that are really great musicians that don't come out to listen or to play on the scene that I'm on, let's say. But the scene in Chicago has changed the last 5 years. And for sure, New York, it's different now than it was 20 years ago.
But I
enjoy going out of those towns and going to smaller places, university towns like Lexington or Kelowna now here in Canada. Because you meet quite different people, and if the music doesn't come to where they are, they travel to where the music is.
Is Canada different than the States, in your opinion, in your experience?
Well, I mean, as a country and with the politics and culture and ways of living, it's for sure completely different. So at the same time, there's a lot of similarities. But I mean, playing this music, we kind of meet almost the same kind of people. Yesterday, there was a lot of different people. Some had never heard this music before. They didn't know that you should be quiet when the music is going on. But that's okay. I mean, it was a new experience for them, and I respect that. But I mean, what you find in the US is, for example, that presenters are just as dedicated and crazy and risk-taking as musicians are or should be. So I mean, there's presenters in the US, and they pay the fee out of their own pockets. And I mean, that's one thing. In Norway, a presenter would never ever dare to think about doing that, because he wouldn't walk out his door unless he knew that he wasn't going to have any risk at setting up a show because of the support money and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. America is very has extremes, actually. Let's say the States have extremes of one sort or another. But in this, I mean, people are dedicated to music. That's for sure. In the States. It's unbelievable.
It's interesting traveling all over the place, playing this kind of music, and as I was saying, you meet the same kind of audience, but you meet a different kind of a hunger for the music, depending on where you go. I mean, if you're in Slovenia or Croatia or Belgrade, I mean, people are they are starving for this kind of music. And if you go to Argentina, they know everything about you, but they are so keen on hearing you live, and then it's a sort of, it's pretty extreme. It's pretty extreme.
Do you like making records?
I like documenting what is going on, for my own sake, for the audience's sake, for history's sake, if one's going to be, think big about it. But I find it interesting to both do studio recordings with the bands and musicians that I'm playing with, but also to do really some of the live concerts, which sometimes are extremely strong and well-recorded. And I think it's worthwhile putting out. I mean, it becomes like postcards that are, or snapshots of our life.
Economically, it's not so viable a situation now with the records.
No, I mean, it depends. I mean, some of the, I've been running a label for myself for, I don't know, 10, 12 years, and now, 34 different releases, and some of them sell well, some don't, but I mean, I'm not making any money on that label.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever record sells is paying for the deficit from the previous records.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to release the music, document the different collaborations or bands, and not least, if you take a stack of CDs and you sell some of them on the road, it's pocket money for breakfast.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, now we are talking for 50 minutes. I promise
you. We could talk another half hour, but I have to be downstairs in 5 minutes.
No, so we're gonna finish in 5 minutes. And this is the last question I will put to you. And Please name me a few of your favorite drummers.
Well, I always say Philip Wilson and Steve McCall.
Wow.
Because A, they are incredible drummers, and B, they are drummers. I mean, when you ask that question, I think I should be aware of the fact that people are reading this and listening to it, so then they can learn some new names. And then I also think of Steve McCall and Philip Wilson. I mean, fantastic musicians. Not much people know of them, their work, and it's not so easy to find their records, but you can find them. But I think those two are incredible drummers. And of course, people already should know of Elvin Jones and Tony Williams, so I kind of don't think or feel that I have to mention their names.
Is there any, what about Norwegian, young Norwegian drummers? Please give us some names. Or Nordic drummers, we don't know.
No, I'm with, I mean, Norwegian drummers. I mean, the shit is that one always goes back to sort of Jon Christensen or Eivind Kleiber or Tony Oxley, John Stevens. Steve Noble's fucking fantastic, but he's not young at all. I mean, there are some younger drummers in Norway, but the shit is that sometimes it doesn't take much time before they sort of choose a very easy path to go. I mean, I enjoy playing with the other drummer in large unit, Andreas Wildhagen.
He's playing also percussion. I mean, Brazilian percussion.
Or the Brazilian percussionists. They are from Brazil, and I mean, one guy is now living back in. But I mean, when it says percussion, it means basically just the odd bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's another youngest drummer in Sweden, I can't remember his name. But, I don't know, it's for me it's a little bit difficult question, because sometimes I hear myself in there playing, or I hear they are copy of the copy of the copy of the copy, and I sort of, for fuck's sake, come on, you've got to know that it's your duty to really figure the shit out and find out who you are as a musician, and I always seek, and sometimes I miss the personality within the musicians playing.
What kind of sound producing you like in drumming or with different drummers?
Ooh, well,
like,
I mean,
let's say Steve McCall, let's say Air Trio.
Yeah, for example. Well, the thing is that he pulls out so many different sounds from this very simple drum kit, and it's extremely transparent and it's extremely dynamic. And he's working with all different factors, within the, what should I say, ways of playing. I mean, you don't get loud without playing quiet. You don't get quiet without playing loud, and dense versus sparse. So he's using all parameters, that exists, within, playing music.